This is an interview with Pat Muscoto for the Goal of the Chicano Studies Department by Rosemary Vergado at 404-278 on March 10, 1972 at 1:30 o'clock. As you are a member in the Chicano Studies Department, what courses do you teach in?
Okay, I teach several courses. Like I said, 104 A and B, which are the English component of bilinguals, communication skills, and I teach creative writing and mastering human documents.
Since you teach in bilingualism, what do you feel is necessary and important for other schools to adapt the bilingual program?
Could you ask that question again?
Since you teach in bilingualism, why do you feel it is necessary and important for other schools to adopt the bilingual program?
Well, it's necessary from several points of view. One, the cultural, which I think is the most important, okay? One of the major deficiencies of the schools, the high schools, junior high schools, or in grammar schools, even colleges, is that in teaching the Chicano, they have assumed the melting pot theory. They have assumed that the Chicano must sacrifice his culture and must, upon doing that, he must then take on the other culture being the American culture, okay? And in doing that, he naturally takes on the national language of the American culture, which is English, okay? Given that type of situation, the Chicano is asked to make several sacrifices that are very detrimental to him in a psychological sense. It has been proven that without any worthwhile self-concept, that a person is not as productive as he would be, for example, if he were to have a real good sense of being within himself, know where he is, know who he is, what he's doing, okay? That type of an individual is productive, usually, more often than the person who doesn't know who he is, where he came from, and what he's about, okay? Well, in bilingualism, you have the opportunity to teach culture, okay? Because languages don't exist without culture. You always have, if you have culture, you have language. If you have language, you have culture. They occur concomitantly together, okay? So if we're talking about making the Chicano a more productive citizen, you're talking about giving him that self-concept, that self-worth, okay? And in order to do that, you have to teach him who he is, where he came from, what he's been, and what he has to be, okay, or must be. So in doing that, you have to teach him his language, because the language, Spanish, projects so much of the culture itself, and it says so much more than just speaking English. Because you can teach the Chicano his history, you can teach him his literature, you can teach him his art, but if you don't have the language itself, then you only teach him about somebody else's language, somebody else's art, somebody else's history, somebody else's way of life. For example, let's take yourself, okay? Your name is Rosemary Delgado. Okay, now, Rosemary Delgado is automatically a member of the American society, you see. But what happens if I say Rosa Maria Delgado, you see? There's a big jump, you see? Well, Rosa Maria Delgado is not an American citizen because American citizens don't speak that way, you see? So the identity thing there is very real, you see? The cultural thing is very real there. And the attitude that it can happen in you, just knowing yourself as Señorita Delgado and not Miss Delgado, you see, the reality that it would come about in you, you see, is much greater in terms of recognizing that you're a person of two cultures, you see. So in that sense, you know, bilingualism is necessary. It has to be, you see. There's no other way about it. Because if I teach you your culture, if I teach you, you know, that, which means your history, your art, your literature and whatnot, then what we have really is you're learning, you know, another culture, because you're still Miss Delgado. You see, you never Miss Delgado or Señorita Delgado. Yes. So that has to be taken into consideration, and that's why bilingualism. That's what we have to.
When the students, you know, when they come into the bilingual program here at Cal State Long Beach, do you think most of the majority of them are having any trouble in finding themselves? That they do have an identity crisis?
Oh yeah, sure. In fact, you can tell it, especially the first day, because, well, let's face it, first of all, it's a new experience, okay, going to college, the very idea of going to college. It's a new experience for these kids because, let's face it, traditionally, Chicanos do not go to college in any great numbers or any appreciative numbers so that you can say, well, Chicanos do, in fact, go to college. Okay, there are, before, it was few and far between, so that really you would see him more as a very strange person going to college, okay? And that first day, the kids are in class, you know, I call out the roll, and the first thing I do is I don't pronounce their names in the English. I pronounce it in Spanish, okay? So immediately, it places them. They know they're not in a typical class, okay? Let's take an example. Okay, I have students, like, we have the common names of John or Paul, okay, Henry. So instead of saying John Mendoza, I say Juan Mendoza, okay? Or I say Paulo, okay, Mendoza. And or Pedro or Enrique, okay? And the same thing with the girls, okay? Instead of Mary, Maria. Maria, did you know your name had an accent? What? You know? So it begins to blow their mind, so to speak, okay? Especially for those who are not accustomed to the Spanish reference and the names. And instead of Rodriguez, you know, it becomes Rodriguez, you know, with the accent over the I, you see. So it begins to blow. What? My name has an accent? You know, what's happening here, you see? And a lot of times what happens is these kids, they first come in, their prior 12 years was very frustrating in school, okay? I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. And so they come into the class, and they say, well, here we go, goddamn English class again, you know? And so, you know, I have to do this thing again, you know, grammar and whatnot. So they come in there, and there's a lot of animosity, and there's 12 years of frustrations there in their eyes as they look at me, you know. And realizing this, then I start to try to make them relax with the language, so to speak. And I try to do it biculturally, bilingually, you know. I make reference to the culture, our culture. For example, hey, you know, how come your eyes are all red? What did you do? You eat too much menudo last night or something like this, you know? To relax them, you see? Relax them with myself and then with our culture, you see? So they said, hey, you know, he knows about me, you see? He knows about my culture. They don't really intellectualize that up here. They don't say that intellectually. But they feel it, you see? You know, tamales, you know, wow, you know, tamales, you know tamales, I know tamales, tamales, you know, we're one, in other words, you see, they don't say it, but they begin to feel it, you know, and so the self-identity begins to, where initially it was not really there, or somewhat there, but not identified by themselves, you know, then as soon as we start making reference to our culture, our foods, and our music, etc., you know, then they begin to relax, and to start doing as though they were back home again, you know, with their familia and whatnot. So they begin to open up. So at the end, yeah, it's a big bridge we have to go across.
Okay. What year did the Chicano Studies Department come into effect at Cal State Long Beach?
1969, September.
1969. Were you one of the instructors who was in creating the Chicano Studies Department?
Well, I was here in September of 1969 when it first began, but I was not here with the initial planning of the department. When I got here, they had our introduction classes already planned. They had the bilingual package, which at that time included speech. So we had speech, Spanish, and English, 10 units total. Then we had history course, we had a lit course. And what else did we have? We didn't offer too many at that time. I think we offered about 12 classes. or something like that. 12, 16 classes.
Yeah, how did they go about, you know, deciding what classes that should be offered in the Chicago Studies Department?
Well, like I said, I don't really know, you know, what the basic brainwork was in terms of developing the program, but I know that as when I got here, as we were beginning to formulate the classes that we were teaching, you know, formulate by saying that we were putting them in the correct form that they should go or should begin to be accredited by the curriculum department or curriculum committee of the school and then of the college, you know. Because at that time, they were all what they called new classes or experimental classes. They weren't fully accredited classes or accepted classes of the curriculum. So we had to go through a procedure to get them accepted. And at the time that we were going through there, we could see that we were being too oriented in the humanities, because most of us that were teaching were in the humanities, you know, literature and the languages, okay? And at that time, there was only one individual, well, actually two, who were not in the humanities, Fred Sanchez, who was a history teacher, and Dr. Sandoval, who was a sociologist, okay, a sociology major. So we saw that there was a lack of balance there, so we began planning for the next semester to try to create balance, give more history classes, sociology classes, and family education, and this kind of thing.
Okay. Does this department offer a Bachelor of Arts
degree in the Mexican stuff? Yeah, we're offering it. In fact, it's my understanding that March, no, it won't be March, it'll be probably in April, in which our program will be fully recognized by the Chancellor's Office. And that way we can officially say that we are graduating kids with a BA degree, but we've been offering that program for about a year now.
To be an instructor in the Chicano Studies program, is it mandatory? Is it a mandatory requirement to be bilingual?
Well, let me put it this way: if there is the opportunity to hire a person a Chicano who is bilingual and who is bicultural, we'll hire him. If the situation arises where there are no qualified people, then we'll hire a person who's monolingual. Our past experience has been that we had to hire a monolingual person, Ross Kiborski, remember him? And he was monolingual, and he was an English major, but we needed an English major, and English majors of Chicano background just aren't around. So we hired him to teach the course, the 104 course, until such time that he could be replaced, which he has in the semester. But we try our best to get bilingual people. Yeah.
Having bilingual, you know, being bilingual, does that make it? Can he understand more the Anglo?
Well, when you say bilingual, again, like I said before, you're talking about cultures, okay? And you're talking about perspectives as well, or what they call world views, the way you see your reality or the way you see the world. And, studies have come about to test the facility of kids who are bilingual in learning communicative skills and also learning history or science, or non-physical science or non-natural science courses, subjects. And they have found that a bilingual person does in fact learn better because he can see things from several perspectives, not just one. You see, and let's face it, everything you learn is culturally influenced. Okay, if you learn history, you influence your learning of history because of your cultural background. Okay, well, if you're learning history and you have several cultural backgrounds, well, then imagine the perspectives. You know, you can see, for example, the Mexican-American War, not only from the perspective of the U.S. citizen, but also from the Mexican perspective, you see, and from the Chicano perspective, with a less than complete perspective, you teaching. So you can see it from several sides. You know, how they say, well, you should look at an argument from all sides. Well, that's no more true than would be for the bilingual person as a reality. Yeah?
In the past, why didn't other schools provide a Chicano study program with you bilingual?
Well, like I said at the first part of our little interview here, that the educators and governments in this country, municipal, state, federal, we're not really concerned with making people bilingual. We're not concerned with making them bicultural. They're concerned with making them American citizens. And your whole educational process was geared towards assimilation, you see, of making you into one type of individual with one set of values, values that are, you know, reflected in the society, American values, if you will, you know. And so that's why they weren't offered. The perspective wasn't there either for bilingualism or biculturalism. Generally speaking, people didn't see the need for it. But that's an irony too, because they saw a need for it in terms of enriching their themselves. You know, for example, how do you become a better person? Well, you learn about other peoples, okay? So they say, well, you know, you learn a foreign language and learn about that country, you know, or that culture. Get French, German, Spanish, whatever, then you begin to understand other people. Well, ironically, they were telling the Mexican, get rid of your language and learn English, you see. But yet they were telling their own people, okay, learn English, but then learn a foreign language también, you know. So you had them telling one person, don't learn a foreign language, or get rid of your foreign language, and telling their own people, learn a foreign language, you see. So there's, you know, the contradiction there, which didn't really come to be realized by educators until the latter part of the 60s, as generally speaking, again. So that's why, you know, their whole goal was not towards teaching people that there were, that they could be either bicultural, polycultural, you know, or pluralistic in their cultural background, but be monocultural.
Has this, now that they've developed a Chicano Studies program throughout, you know, a lot of the schools, has it decreased the percentage rate of dropouts of students in high school and college?
No, I don't think so. In high school, okay, yeah, let me qualify myself. I think in terms of high school, that not that the dropout rate has not really decreased that greatly. Why? It's obvious. You don't have what you can really call Chicano studies courses in high schools, generally speaking. For example, you may find ideal situations. You can go to Orange County, go to McPherson High School, and they've got a bilingual, bicultural program there for 10th graders, but they don't have it for 11th graders or 12th graders, okay? Or you could go to El Dorado Junior High School in the same school district, and they have a bilingual, bicultural program for 8th graders, you see, but they don't have it for the 9th graders or 7th graders, you see? So it's very sporadic. In Rancho School District, they've got it for the 3rd and 4th grades, but they don't have it for the 1st, 5th, or 6th grades, you see? And they don't have it for the junior high school or the high school. Montebello High School has two courses, one in history of the Chicano, and the other one is the literature of the Chicano. But the history is taught by an Anglo, and the literature course is taught by a Chicano who doesn't know that much about his own culture, you see, and he readily admits it. So it's very sporadic. You know, you can go to the LA City Schools, and it's very sporadic there, too. So it really hasn't affected the Chicano that much. If, for example, you had a concentrated Chicano courses that extended from the grades 7 through 12, well, then you might see a difference. You know, then you could really see a difference. Why? Because usually kids, Chicanos, or any kind of kid who's going to drop out of school, is usually turning off the school by the 6th grade. And in the 7th grade, his attitudes have really become negative by that time, you know, and he's really beginning to turn off the school. Well, if you can catch him at the 7th grade, at the time where he's really malleable, and say, hey, look, you know, I got a better thing to give you. I got a better idea, you know. And start hitting him with that better idea and show him, teach him, impress upon him, you know, and instill in him that he is a person of worth, you know, that whole thing about self-concept, you know, from the seventh grade on, you might have a chance. You might have a chance to decrease that, that dropout rate. In college, that's a different set. Because college, you're here mainly because you want to be, you see, and there's that difference. In high school and junior high school, you had to be there because you had to be there, you see. Here, you're here because you want to be. You've got that freedom, that free will, that choice, that alternative. And the kids here know that either they put out or they get out, you see. So it's not a question of attitude so much, you know, Chicano self-identity. They just know it. Either I put out or I get out, you see. Now, you can put out and get out. You can put out as a Chicano. You can put out as a person who's willing to accept the values of another culture and still survive, or you can say, I refuse to sacrifice my values and get out, or you can say, I don't know what I should do. You know, there's that type of students too, you know, who just totally lost, you know, and he'll drop out too. But the student who has some kind of an idea, who knows that there's alternatives, he'll either drop out or stay in. And the Chicano does still drop out at that tremendous rate here at the college, you know, even though there is that free choice. It sounds sort of a contradiction, but when you get to looking at it, the dropout rate here is high, but they drop out for different reasons than they do in high school. They know that college, you know, is a benefit. You know, they've been told this over and over again. But usually they'll drop out because they're not prepared. You know, their reading's bad, you know, and their writing's bad. And it's usually the reading and the writing that they'll kill them. Their lack of study skills, you know. And that frustration they can never overcome, you know, that kills them too. But we're trying to resolve that.
Does the department offer any special services for the Chicanos to help them?
Yeah. In fact, if you take a look at our record, going from 1969 to the present, we've come a long way in terms of trying to provide special help for the kids, okay? In 69, like I was telling you before, we had English, we had an English course, it was 3 units, we had a Spanish course, it was 4, then we had a speech course, it was 3. So we had a total bilingual communications package, as we called it, or communications package, of 10 units. And then at that time, we only had Chris Lopez, who's not Chris Mascoro, and myself, and we had Guillermo Hernandez, and we had Antonio Vasquez, okay, who were 2 grad assistants helping us in the labs. And then we had Skaborski, Rod, who was teaching an English class. And we do our own tutoring, you know, and we had at that time roughly 120 students. So between us, we had 2 languages, and speech. So we had a tutor in three subjects. Had to teach reading, and we had to teach study skills, okay? So that went on for that one semester, and we had a dropout rate for a non-successful completion rate of 60%. So only 40% actually successfully completed the whole package. The following semester, we eliminated speech because we just couldn't handle it. You know, there were too many kids and not enough supportive services, as it's called, you know, tutors and whatnot, counselors. And that, we dropped speech the following semester, and then we taught that for about a year and a half and without supportive services, and our failure rate was about the same, about 60%. There were just too many kids with too many problems, you know, attitude, inability to understand the necessity of knowing, having to know how to study, when to study, and how to take notes, etc., you know. And then understanding the language that they're learning, you know, and understanding the subject they're learning, how to test themselves, etc., how to take tests, you know, the whole thing of academic success. And so it was overwhelming. So, Chris, myself, and Bill, and Alex Osuna, who joined us later, we got together and we developed the bilingual special services proposal for the federal government. And we established a program which we had hoped would be funded for $120,000, which would include counselors. We wanted to have 3 counselors, 2 personal counselors and 1 job placement counselor. We wanted to have 16 tutors, 6 grad assistants who would work the labs, and then a study center and a cultural center for the kids. Okay. Well, the government granted us half of that, $60,000, so we dropped our force down to 10 tutors and 4 grad assistants, and then no counselors at all. And then through some excellent maneuvering by our director, we got work study money and we were able to hire the full force of 16 tutors, okay? So the teachers who teach the bilingual skills, Osuna, Chris, myself, we established workshops during the summertime, an orientation during the summertime, and we taught the kids how to, the tutors, how to tutor a subject, how to teach learning skills, study skills, how to take notes, you know, how to practice for an exam, you know, how to take an exam, how to write essay questions, the kind of things to look for in this kind of thing, and then how to counsel kids. And those workshops, so we got funded last year in the fall of 71, and we've had workshops steadily from then until the present for the tutors. And just to show you the type of tutors we have, we had 60 kids who initially had signed up for the job. They wanted the job, and they had to be bilingual, and they had to be bicultural, that is, they had to be proficient in both languages, okay? So we had about 65 kids, and out of the 65, we ended up with about 11. We eliminated all the rest because we weren't qualified. And then we trained those as much as we could, and those 11 are still with us, and they've been highly effective. In fact, last semester, our dropout rate dropped to about 20%. So we went from 60 to 20% in one semester because of supportive services. This is a problem that Chicano art family has. So yeah, we have come a long way.
What role do you think that Chicano students play in this Chicano student department?
Chicano students?
Yeah.
Well, I play several roles. One as the learnee, or the person who's being taught, okay, and who hopefully, eventually, will go out and teach other Chicanos what he's learned or what she's learned, whatever capacity, be it as a political activist, be it as a sociologist, be it as a teacher, whatever. At least they'll learn things that they didn't know before and go out and teach other people, especially their own kids when they get married, you know, and their wives or husbands or whatever. The other role that they play is one of activists, which is an essential role, and that is to go out and make the community or the Anglo aware of the discrepancies that exist in terms of Chicano. In social welfare, you know, is a Chicano being treated fairly in social welfare? Is he being taught adequately in the schools? Is he is a Chicano getting full benefit of Medicare or Medi-Cal, you know? Is he getting full benefits, period, in whatever aspect, okay? And if he's not, why not? See, and these kids engage in that kind of activism, and then they also engage in actual participation programs as tutors, teachers' aides, developers of programs, you know, for kids during the summer, summertime, you know, like this week that we had last year at Hawaiian Gardens and also in Long Beach. So they become teachers, they become tutors, they become designers of programs and they become instruments and initiating programs, you know, so they have a multiple role, really.
You know, in 1969, East LA College, they had a walkout because they thought that the school didn't relate to the community. Do you think this Cal State Long Beach relates to the community?
Well, if you're talking about the Chicano community, I would say no. Let me give you an example. Last year, we had designed 3 extension courses. One was in consumer education, the other one was in the arts, the teaching of the arts, or applied arts, if you will. And the other one was an introduction course to Chicano studies, or an introduction to Chicano history.
Okay.